Welcome in to episode 100 of Coffee and Show. We've made it 100 episodes. Myself and Stu are back once again, and a big episode because it technically is like the first episode of our next season, as we've got our first look at NHL 25 with the drop of the reveal trailer. So in this episode, we are going to mainly discuss the NHL 25 reveal. We're also going to talk about the Blues and Oilers offer sheets, and if you heard anything in between, because I think that was a pretty big moment in the offseason. Plus, the Sharks are now the biggest hype train with the trade for Askarov. So, that being said, we're not even going to go over our dad life yet. There's people out there, the truthers of Coffee and Shell, they care about that. But there's a lot of just NHL addicts like ourselves that want to get into 25. So let's talk about the reveal, what you thought about it, and we'll just kind of go from there of all the stuff that they showed off in it, although it was like 30 seconds long.
Yeah, it's been a while. Like, welcome back, everybody. But I've really enjoyed the skating animations that they added. The being able to straddle the blue line is something I'm a big, you know, real life type hockey stuff. Like, I really enjoy that stuff. And I don't know about you, but over the years, the amount of times you would get sucked out of your zone because your guy couldn't like just hold his feet in the blue line was so annoying. And now being able to straddle the blue line, which is such a cool thing in my opinion. And I think it kind of removes the whole ballerina L2 or LT thing. I think it actually creates some sort of more, I don't know. It just makes it more fluid. I think I'm really happy they added that. And the one timers too, because last year, as you know, you couldn't take a one timer really from far out. And now there's more skill to it. So like, if you pass it over, you can't just smash up on the stick. You have to kind of time it. And I like that. I think it's a lot more, I don't know. I just think it adds just like a little bit more of a skill gap. But then I also think it creates like a goal that happens in real life more, like, you know, and also something that should be out of the game completely, like it was almost sort of last year.
Yeah, in total agreement. Starting with the L2 thing, I used that as the example in my videos going over the reveal. The media trailer that like the, you know, the game changers. Oh, also, we're bearing the lead. Stu is now a game changer. Hell is frozen over, and Daddy Padre is an official, not game changer, design council member, a full-fledged one. He's in there, you know, talking to the devs and stuff. So I can't believe we ever got here, but here we are. Tyler Stewart, game changer.
And it's funny. I had like a few people comment on my tweet, and I did like kind of like a tongue-in-cheek tweet, but it was like somebody's like, "Oh, you're a bootlicker," and I'm like, "Dude,
welcome in, brother."
If anybody knows me, I am the furthest thing from a bootlicker, and everybody knows that. So it's so funny the way that it all happened. And if you just like pay attention to the last year, I know there's some people that are pretty unhappy about it just because of my reputation, and then also people just.
The story arc is unmatched.
No one
will ever get in the way you got in. I will say, bias aside, that you are, regardless of how it comes off, a nerd when it comes to gameplay, and a welcome addition to the Game Changer program. I think that sometimes people just assume it's content creators that get in, and if it was just content creators, man, there is a lot that are not in Division One and not really all that great in the game, like myself. So it's always nice to get players into the game that are really good at it. And the minute thing, I do.
And like, oh, go ahead. And last year, I told a few people, and people just don't know. Like, I'd messaged people last year, like they're on the gameplay side, or the, you know, Hawk on the HUT side, even though he wasn't doing the same kind of thing maybe last year, like Shark, whatever. And I don't know, like I would give them input on things and try to like troubleshoot things that seemed like they were messed up or whatever. And I wasn't doing it to like schmooze, butt kiss, whatever. I just want like a good game. I just want a good hockey game. I don't care. Like it closest thing possible, you know, try to replicate it, but keep it fun. Like I get the whole thing. So it's like, I was doing it last year, even when I wasn't a game changer.
Yeah.
So it's just like,
exactly.
Know,
it
I,
was now,
you I would have done the same thing this year. You know what I mean? Cause I just want to play something that is enjoyable and something that, you know, we all put time into. And I don't know. I mean, now it's just the nice part about it is like, I have more access to be able to actually talk to these people and bounce things off them. And I don't know. I mean, hopefully there's something eventually where maybe they do a live event and the boys get to go out there, maybe have a
That'd
coffee
be sick.
and sell live. That'd be
I'd
cool.
love
But
that.
I mean, we'll see. I mean, it's just cool though. I appreciate Clappy and them letting me in. But it'll be fun.
I've never thought I'd see the day, but it is nice to have you in there. That being said, so you mentioned about the L2. I do want to talk about that because in the trailer is so short, but in the media. So before, if anyone doesn't know, basically what happens is a day before that the worldwide reveal trailer goes out, usually the cover athlete, they'll do a thing where all the people with NDAs, all the journalists, all the review companies like IGN and all of them, they'll get into a thing and then they'll show us kind of like a presentation, a little bit more in-depth, slightly more in-depth when it comes to the reveal trailer. So one of the things they showed was using L2 at the blue line. And they didn't show that in the same way in the reveal trailer because what I did was I went in and I showed an example of what NHL 24 looks like because I think it is overlooked in that trailer because it's so flat. It's all flashy cuts and, you know, like they're like next-gen vision control. Like it's all – they are the kings at coming up with – super complicated and good names for things that are just whatever. But that being said, when you go left and right at the blue line, you're right. Like you can only face the boards. And when you back skate, so when you were talking about the ballerina stuff, like when you back skate, you're keeping the puck to the goaltender, not your body. So if you back skate at the blue line, like that's how you would set up a lot of tip shots because it would kind of force your forward up top to look at you. But the problem with that is when you L2 at the blue line, you're wide open for a breakaway against. Like if anyone plays aggressive on you, the puck, like your body's not in the way. You're holding the puck out away from you, and there's nothing there. Like if someone poachecks you, it's a breakaway against. Now in NHL 25, it looks like when you hold L2, you'll open your skates up and you can make a decision where to go, and you're keeping your body to the net. So you can kind of walk the line a lot more like Cale Makar as opposed to, I don't know, Dan Boyle, I guess, is probably the best player I ever got to watch do it, but he was a magician. But no, I do think that at the blue line is where you'll see quite a bit of it from the majority of the player base. I think at the top end, they showed a clip that Quinn Hughes did, that goal where he opens up his skates and comes all the way around and then in the forehand. That's a goal that's like sort of in NHL 24 and before, but you basically back skate out. You know, like that was a goal. Like you back skate out, but like your ass is beside the goalie, and then you back out into the slot where you would end up if you could open up your skates and skate all the way around in a circle on your forehand. So I think that's going to be interesting. It'll be curious to see how fluid it all is. But I think that what you said, like the word fluid, would be how I would describe it as well. It just adds an animation that actually makes sense, and it's not just a flashy buzzword. I have a feeling that it might be something that we think is big right now, and maybe it's not utilized as much as we think, because over the last few years, something that they've done is, or at least in NHL 24, you know, with all the big hype they put on stuff, they walk it back a little bit. Like, you know, full pressure system last year, I mean, by the end of the game, man, I barely see it. You know, like you only see it if you are pounding someone, which I think is like how it should be, you know, almost. But I'm curious how you think about that, because the full pressure system is still in the game. It's not removed. I saw some questions on that. Unless they state like something is removed or replacing, assume that it's there. And especially if it's like a back of the box feature, expect it to be there for the next couple of years, because if they take it out, then that's a waste of a dev cycle. What are your thoughts on the full pressure system now, as opposed to 24, and what it was like at the end of the game or the GWC cycle?
Yeah, I don't know. From like what I hear, it's still kind of easy to get, I guess, but it's not as like at the end of the cycle of 24, it was like hard to get.
Man, like you just didn't see it.
You didn't see it, so it was almost like they just most of the year it seemed like they had trouble trying to kind of balance out like what they intended for, and then what they were trying to implement, and then it just kind of like never worked, and they like ran out of time almost.
You didn't like it at the start. And I think that when it was at the beginning of the game, it was pretty rough, but more from like it's not realistic. Cause I said this from the beginning that like, it's a unrealistic way to get to a realistic outcome because there's the timer and it's like arcadey, but like in real hockey, when you beat the piss out of someone for 2 minutes, you get that penalty kill feel where the guys can barely move. And, you know, that sort of made sense. How do you feel about it now? Is it, like, in an okay spot? Are you okay with it in the game still?
Yeah, I think if it – I'm okay with it in the game. And, like, we talked about it last year. I think it'd be cool if there was more things to decrease it or knock it down completely. Like, you know, covering the puck as your goalie.
That needs to be added, yeah.
I know everyone has, you know, ADD in our world now. And, I mean, I'm not trying to make fun of it, but I'm just – you know what I mean? Like, everyone just wants to go. Yeah. And – you know, no one wants to freeze a puck, but it's like you should get rewarded for freezing your puck as a goalie.
Like, that's a real thing, yeah.
That's a real thing. Like when I know my team's hemmed in real life, like I cover it up, I try to control the play. Like I think you need to do that. Or if you, I don't know, just different things like that. You know, even like if you ice it again, even if you ice it, yeah, you're still tired, but it'll go up a
little. You should get a little bit, yeah.
A little bit, you know, or like if you chip it out of the zone, it should, you know, I don't know, just. There should be more things that deter it than just like, oh, you have to like skate it out completely and then like wait that little threshold of time and then, okay, it's gone. You know what I mean? And even then, like, I feel like for making it go all the way down, it's kind of extreme because it's like, yeah, like you're still tired. It should kind of like go down. But it's just like, I don't know. I'm sure it's really tough to figure it out, honestly. Like
the balance is tough. It literally felt like I would see it like in division again, just like division one and two. I've always said that I think that once you get to division two, you play a different game than what the majority of the player base experiences. And I think that the biggest change or implement that they can put in, and maybe we see that in NHL 25, would be. I saw someone in the game changer chat actually, and I apologize for not giving the people their props because I like giving people props that come up with good ideas. But someone said it might have been Tugi actually. You know that chart that they made famous with the Zach Hyman goals, mm-hmm. where it shows where he scored all his goals. If you break the offensive zone down into those spots, and obviously some are more dangerous than others, if the bar went up. Higher on higher danger chances and very little on like getting across the blue line and firing it on net. And, you know, because your guy will get there first or the rebound counting the same as like a one timer that you're unloading in the slot. It just doesn't make sense. All shots are not equal. And I think that would be the final thing to really improve the full pressure system. If they're going to keep it in the game would be to add like a dynamic shot, not multiplier, but like applicator for it. So that'd be huge. But anyways, I didn't want to go off on NHL 24, but that's just what we do on this show. Yeah, so back to the reveal. We talked about the L2. I think that the trailer was very light, like extremely light, and it was also much later in the marketing cycle. I don't know if that was on purpose, if it's, you know, they were working on things. I don't know. It's not that much later, but like a week or two is pretty long. But that being said, I don't know how impactful the L2 will be. I have a feeling that it will be pretty impactful compared to the last few games, but we'll have to wait and see. You mentioned, skill-based one-timers. So I said this in my reveal trailer, and I forget that the majority of the player base does not play at the highest level. And I found a lot of people say that like they still take one-timers and they score one-timers, and I think in World of Chell, it wasn't an issue. But in HUD, at least.
Yeah, especially when they're all running 1T.
Exactly, yeah. They're all running 1T with elite edges and stuff. Like, see, yeah, like, exactly. If you didn't have a 1T forward on X Factor, and you had a 2-on-1 or a 2-on-0, automatic save. Like, it was absurd. And I'm a lot of people confused one-timers with the force cross-crease, like, tap-in. That's not a one-timer. That is not a one-timer. I'm talking about you're up at the point where you're using the umbrella or the dime, and you fire it to Ovechkin in the face-off dot. Those should go in with a player that's got great shooting. You know, you put it in their wheelhouse. So we'll have to wait and see how the skill-based part works. There's definitely a timing aspect to it.
And I hope like the guys that actually can take one timers that if you're using them in HUD or versus not ESHL, but they're like guys that are like good at it or they have like a higher kind of area
success rate.
Like Ovechkin can like you already
dry sidle at the goal line.
Like yeah, and Ovechkin can handle like every spot where you put it, like in real life. Like he can 1T it somehow everywhere. It's like I watched Tarasenko for years, skated with him for years. God love the guy, great shot, but he couldn't take a 1T. And, like, people think, like, oh,
he has the best shot. Yeah, yeah, the best shot. He can score a bunch of goals.
You can take a 1T if you're in the NHL. It's like, no, dude, there's a lot of dudes that can't. They straight up be like, I can't take a 1T. I'm not good at it. Like, I'll fan on it or I'll mess it up. And it's really true. Like, not every dude can take one, even if they're in the NHL. So I think it'd be cooler if guys, you know, like Stamkos and, you know, those kind of guys.
These guys are just hand of the rock. You mentioned a good thing. So while you were talking about the full pressure system, I actually, in Hockey Ultimate Team specifically, I actually don't mind X Factors, because until we get something that allows to get custom strides and shots, there really is no differentiator. And other than height, really, and weight. So some of the X Factors that I think that should put in the game that would be really cool would be, just before I forget, the full pressure system. I think there should be defensemen or forwards that are really good defensively that have a thing that does not get impacted by full pressure system. Well, like, call it marathon or something, where if they have that, then they don't lose power or they don't lose energy while the full pressure is activated, kind of nullifies it. I think that'd be really cool. It would get to a point where it'd be like everyone would just run the best players with like that, so that it wouldn't matter at all, probably. But nonetheless, yeah. I think that would be kind of cool. The other one, while you were talking,
like iron lungs or something.
Yeah, exactly. There. I don't know if 1T works like this. It might, but when you, I would love an X Factor ability that when you send someone a one timer, like you mentioned, the Ovechkin being able to catch it anywhere, that they get full power and accuracy, almost like close quarters on a one timer, regardless of how they handle it. That would be that might be overpowered now, because it looks like one timers might be back in the game. That's the other thing I'm curious of, is that I think people are. Again, paying attention to the more casual player base, or the players that just, you know, they don't play the game to be super competitive. One-timers were like the way to score, and it for like a decade, you would just try and get a one-timer off, and it became, I think, frustrating because a lot of people can't defend it. And obviously, the better you get, like, the better you are, but like for a lot of the player base, it's hard to always defend the one-timer. I hope it isn't like they come back and that's the only way to score again, but it should go in. Like, man, I don't know how many times I'd be streaming and I, you know, you give up a 2-on-1 or I have a 2-on-1 and I'll take a one timer and be like, bro, I forgot this is NHL 24. Like, it's just, it was when they added the human goalie animations in, because the goalie would like make it, it would get over the post or get over and it would just be one of those flashy big glove saves. And it's just, you know, like I said, I don't want it to be overpowered and the only way to score, but I would love to see a clean D2D one timer, like once in a while, bro. Like, I haven't seen one in two games. You know, if anyone in the YouTube channel, because again, I guarantee there's people, whenever we talk gameplay, there's always going to be people that disagree, because that's how gameplay is. It's so subjective, and I totally agree. What I enjoy won't be what Stu enjoys, and what Stu enjoys isn't what you enjoy. I want you to send me a clip of you scoring a D2D one-timer in Online Hockey Ultimate Team that is clean and untipped. I want to see that. And if you could send me that, I'll eat my words. Because I haven't seen one, and I've played over 1,000 games, and I love D2D one time. You watch my channel, I love shooting from the point. I think it's just hilarious to set up a good tip shot. But anyways, so we'll see how skill-based one-timers, how they work, and if it's very hard to pull off or things like that, I'll be very curious. The other thing they announced in just touching on the gameplay side of things is that they called it reactive actions, but... from my understanding, it's just the AI now gets out of their own way. So we'll see if like that works. Man, there's nothing more frustrating than when you're trying to enter the zone and your AI will just cut through the middle and run right into you at the blue line. I'm hoping that that's like gone, but I don't know. They also mentioned something where AI's improved. They talk about this every year, but it seems different because they mentioned like updated playbooks or power play things. I don't think we're getting new strategies. I would love that. And I still think that would be one of the biggest changes to the game, but it looks like when you're cycling the puck, your AI won't, at least, I don't know from my experience, I don't know about from you, when you set up like the overloader behind the net in 24, your players would just stop moving, like your AI, and the defense would cover them, and then you're just like, okay, that person's eliminated from a pass. It looks like now they'll fight to get open, so I feel like that would be a pretty big thing to add into the game.
Yeah, I feel like maybe the last like year or so, I just feel like once I get in the zone and everyone just kind of like boxes up and stands still, it's like, I feel like just like nothing happens. Like
nothing, bro.
You could just stand there and like, you're just standing there, and like you're and it's like I don't really know what to do. And like hockey is such a flow sport
Yep.
and such a flow game that it really does make it, you know, kind of just like in a
Like I want my
standstill.
winger to bleed out like towards the boards when I'm on the like the weak side one to at least get a one timer. In 24, if you're using the overload and like the defenseman then stands there to cover, your weak side winger just won't move. And it's like, oh my God, okay, so that's
Right,
not an
like it's
option.
almost like you wish there was like a setting you could put like be like ultra like
Aggressive
aggressive
or
and
yeah,
yeah.
dude, yeah. I think that'd be dangerous, like, because I'm assuming it'd be broken. But they always talk about upgrading AI. I'll believe it when I see it. But I do like that it's not something like super gimmicky. If it's literally just the AI sees where you're going and they just try and float, like that actually will be impactful, I think. Especially if like one timers are back in the game. So we'll have to wait and see on that. Hockey Ultimate Team got a new mode. You know, that 5 years, we finally got a new mode. No news on how it'll work. It looks like it'll be another weekly mode, so it's not just like live moments or anything like that. It does look like it'll have a cycle to it. I don't know how it's gonna work. We'll have to wait for the HUT deep dive that I don't think we'll get until. There was a deep dive schedule that was mentioned in the I'm gonna call it the journalist reveal. I don't know what the name of that would be called. And it showed like not dates, but like late August, early September, all of that. Hutz was like late September, which is pretty common now in the Ultimate Team industry. MLB does it. I think the day of launch, where they'll do their stream going over MLB, and then they do the press the button stream, and then the game's live.
Which isn't a terrible idea in
It's
terms of
not.
hype,
No, it's
in
not.
terms of
But
hype, but yeah.
from a background standpoint, I can explain why. They don't need to ship a HUT content finished with the game. That's something that they can do with a day zero patch. Some stuff needs to be in, but like things like sets being correct with like the right graphics and all of that and all the debug stuff, that is something that they leave later on. Not leave later on, but it's not a focus early on, because when the game ships, which is late August, to like retailers, or it has to go to get printed on discs and stuff, you gotta understand that the game has to be finished to an extent. The online portion doesn't have to be, because you wouldn't play it online, right? So,
Hey, real quick, we didn't really like go. I know we're going off on a tangent here about the HUT thing real quick, but the cover obviously is the Hughes brothers,
Oh,
if people
yeah.
if you guys didn't have seen it yet. But I was wondering that when you said get it shipped, because Clappy put out that picture of him holding the copies.
Yeah.
Is it gonna not, because that was a very odd year with Heatley when he had the
Oh
manslaughter thing
man, I have that cover. That's the
with
cover I
Dan
have.
Snyder, but if you remember, like they had to switch it and they had to put Joe Sakic on the cover, which is like one of the crazier like
Same thing
flips
with Kane. Kane
with
and
Kane,
Taves
right?
were
Yep.
on 12.
So since like a lot of people, at least I mean I feel like I don't even know how many people actually go out and buy the actual hard copies anymore. So I was just wondering, like, do you think like in the stores you're gonna see like the multiple Hughes copies like he had, or is it gonna be like all one? Like, you know what I'm
So
saying?
that was announced. So it looks like they're doing like a more traditional one, what they used to do, which I actually like. It's the US Standard Edition is the Jack Hughes one. The
Okay.
Canada and Worldwide is Quinn, and the Deluxe Edition is all three. But I don't know if you could buy the Deluxe Edition hard copy. So I don't
Yeah.
know, because I remember back, like, I think it was NHL 20
That's kind
where.
of a good idea.
Because like NHL 20 was Matthews and the Laine was the Europe one.
Oh yeah, you're right.
So I think they're trying to go back to that route.
Those are like collector's items if you're like a I feel like our boy Ezdor's out there. He's like an NHL
Oh, dude, Kinu. Kinu's the one.
Yeah.
Kinu's got
Him? Okay.
So you can't see it in the shot that I've got here, but in the background I have all the games with the hard copies.
Like
I
it'd be
don't
cool to have the European
The
editions.
European one, he's got all the European ones, so
That's
it
cool.
is pretty cool. I think Yari Curry's on one, if memory serves. Like a random it's funny because they announced, I actually saw I apologize if you watch my YouTube videos and I'm not getting the name right, because I didn't save your tag on the YouTube video, but I saw a comment because they marketed it as the first time siblings were on the cover. And they were like, that actually isn't true. NHL 11 had the Sedin brothers in Europe. And I was like, oh, like that's kind of interesting, because I would have never seen, like, you know, Europe is still a very small player base in comparison, so we don't see that. And it's usually not the marketed one that like North Americans ever see. So,
right.
But no, I do like the multiple covers. People were really harping on Luke Hughes getting on the cover. I like, he's a brother, you know, and he's not the main focus because Jack gets one, Quinn gets one, Luke is on the deluxe with them together. So, you know, yay more New Jersey Devil Master Set player items, I guess. But
dude, I'm looking at the list right now because, like, I like my brain forgetting the people that are on it. And, like, some of the people, like, you, I don't even know if you remember this. They not only did they do an EU copy, but they did a Czech copy in 2000. Richard Schmelick was on the cover.
Really?
In 2001. Yuri Letnin for Europe, Marty Ruchinski.
I would love to see what those covers look like.
I know. Like, dude, I'm kind of, like I said, like, if I was like you, where it's like, this is like my job, and like, I like having like the you know,
having
the
them all, like those ones?
Yeah, like, I think it'd be cool to have like the collectors. I'm sure there's some dude out in Europe that has it, like, that's on eBay for like $5 or something. Like, it's just, it's so crazy. Like, some of the names, like, I had never, like, dude, like, did you ever know there was a Denmark edition with, in 2010, with Mikkel Boedker?
I mean, like, Mikkel Boedker, dude. Yo, that was an OG versus, like, legend. He was so fast.
I'm legend. Jonas Hiller, 2012, had his own cover.
That's crazy. Does it actually look, because, like, back then, they weren't the action shots. It was, like, the drawn one, kind of. Like, I would, man, I gotta see some of these. That's crazy.
Yeah, so I never had, like, the only one that I always remember as a kid was, like I said, like, was the one.
Healy. I have the Healy one because you could, it's hard to find that one because it's Sakic, I think.
Yeah.
I think Sakic's the one that, yeah. That's crazy. That's crazy to know. Dude, fuck it. Jonas Hiller. Love that he made it. He's a cover athlete. No, I think it's all right. I don't think, I saw the pre-order bonuses. They are going, like, they're overwhelming you with just packs, but, like, the names, like, you have, like, it's like the Family Heritage Choice Pack, like, you know what I mean? Like, they're just trying, you can see the marketing switch over the last couple of years, because if you go to the Hut store, there's just 27 different packs, and you have no idea what's in them. Like, the names are obnoxious, and, like, you can see that, like, it's just the overwhelm, they're trying to overwhelm, you know, with that, so... we'll see we did get some card art. It looks like 84 overalls will be, you could get a, if you pre-order before September 13th, if you're watching this, you probably play the game a lot. If you play HUD all year round, get the deluxe edition and get it before the 13th, simply because it's worth the money of all the stuff that you get if you are a yearly HUD player. If you don't play HUD year round, wait, get EA Play and then get it for like 10% off. And go that route. So, and also another thing you can do, get EA Play for $7.99, and when the game drops a week early in September, you can play for 10 hours. And play for 10 hours, and if you don't enjoy it, then whatever, cancel your EA Play subscription regardless. It's $7.99 for the month, and you get to test it for 10 hours. And you can also buy, if the only thing you want is to play the game early, you can buy the standard edition for $89.99 with EA Play. I think it's $10, 10% off, so it ends up being $80. This is in Canada. Buy EA Play, which is for the month, it's $7.99. You can play 10 hours in that first week at September 27th all the way up to launch. And then on October 4th, you've got the standard edition copy. So you get what you wanted if you're not a HUT player, let's say, and you just want to play the game early. Go that route. Save yourself like $40. Like, don't. Now that I'm older and have a kid, I am super cheap. So I'm all about that, man. Like, I have a new respect for money. And, so definitely go that route. I'm going to make a video on the pre-order stuff because it's kind of confusing. They just try to overwhelm you with, like, additions. And so it's a dev unique marketing tactic to just try and overwhelm. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, might as well just get the big boy edition. So the wild card thing. The biggest thing, I tried to emphasize it. Obviously, the new mode in HUT. God, we needed that. Right, we need to break up the cycle of rival squad battles, champs repeat. But man, that second line of the snippet, and another thing that was annoying, it's not in the reveal trailer, but the press release had 10 times more info. And usually you at least see a piece of everything. They didn't mention HUT wildcard and, you know, whatever. So in that little snippet of HUT, they talk about an XP progression path and specifically say, play the way you want to earn the rewards that are offered. And I'm like, dude, I was like, okay. So again, it might not be accurate, and they'll probably, you know, just scuff the rewards and it won't end up mattering. You know, it all depends on the rewards. But
and that's my thing is like I love the path because I do have it on MLB. Yep. And it's great for me, like not being able to grind all the time, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It you can kind of keep up and you can, you know, and then they have the double XP weekends and you can do things like that. So it's the fact though, like I don't want it to get to like level 20 and have a mini pack,
dude. Yes,
and
yeah,
and get to level 40 and it's like whatever is better than a mini pack, and then the next scene, like just kind of like incrementally going better, and then like, oh, it's 2,000 coins, and oh, never mind, now you get 4,000 coins, and it's just like these little tiny, it's almost like when we had objectives,
yeah,
and I'm kind of wondering, did they get rid of objectives?
So from what I would guess, how this is going to work is, again, we haven't seen the XP path at all.
Yeah, we don't know anything.
We have no idea how it's going to work. My hope would be that you gain XP by completing objectives, right? Mm-hmm. But the objectives aren't something that are unsustainable. Like, so what we saw was in 75 deeks with Scott Niedermeyer, and it's like, yeah, dude, okay, I guess I'm going to squad battles and sitting behind the net. It's like 75 assists with whoever. I hope it's not like that. So my hope would be that the reward being for a launch, I'm going to use an example. Let's say they go the same route and every week we get a free card that we can work towards. Let's say it's an 86 overall Quinn Hughes that you can get, okay? And, you know, in NHL 24, you'd be like, do all these objectives and you'll get Quinn Hughes' card by doing all of these absurd objectives that you can only do via squad battles. Doing it online is just literally not possible. Like, you know, scoring 75 assists with one player item will take you, most people, a month. And if you're good at the game, maybe even longer, because the better you are, the better competition you have, it's how it goes. What I would love to see is, okay, I scored some goals online. I got more XP towards the path of getting that card. So I'm curious, is it a season-long XP path, or is it like weekly that runs with events? So if it's 2 weeks long, let's say, or 1 week long even, and you've got the reward is the 85 overall whatever card, and you can do all those objectives, but those objectives give you a boost to the XP. But while you're doing those things in Rivals, you get a significant boost compared to doing it on squad battles. And if you did it in squad battles, it's got to be on Superstar, and then that gets you the most amount. Like, if you can do the deeks and goals and stuff on Superstar, I'm okay with equating that to online play. Just because I think for the majority of the people, like, Superstar difficulty is still very hard. For the casual player. But like, if you did it on Rookie, you're getting much less XP for that move or objective, right? You still get the big chunk by completing the objective overall, but while you're doing each one of those things, almost like Hut Rush, only it isn't broken and actually tracks. I would love to see it work like that. So like, yeah, there's a card, go earn it. I don't want to have to touch squad battles, you know, or if I'm an offline player, I don't want to have to play Rivals, you know? I think that's, and it's probably going to be very touch and go, and like they're gonna edit it a ton over the year because it's probably not gonna be perfect at all if there's like modifiers or things like that and how they do it. And I swear, what you mentioned, dude, if it's premium pack at level 4, like, dude, miss me with that. Make the
basically like the Hut Rush rewards. Yes. That's what I'm scared of.
Miss, you know, me with that.
Like, I get it, you know, it's still free stuff. I'm not, mm-hmm. you know, I get the yeah. whole thing, but make it like the year when we had an MLB where it was like, we had like the 99 Kershaw, like the 90,
what, Kluber. It was like,
yeah, the Kluber, like
that was MLB 20 or 21.
Everyone's a winner then, you know what I mean? And people are excited to like grind actually, even though it's,
I think the, what, like getting the grind or removing as much of the grindy feel. And what I mean by grind isn't like someone who can sit down and play for 10 hours. It's sitting down for 10 hours and not feeling like work. Like, if you're going to sit down and you've got 3 hours to play on a Saturday, all right, you worked all week, you got 3 hours to play on a Saturday. You don't want to have to spend it going into squad battles on Rookie and getting the card. If you can spend those 3 hours and play Rivals or Champs, okay, or Wild Card, you know, whatever the hell that is, and not play the, and not be forced to play the way that the game makes you to actually get the card, that's then that is one of the biggest changes and adds to Hutt that we'll ever get. You know, it's not perfect, I think, you know, but I think that that goes a long way. Just getting away from that nonsense grind where it literally is you clocking in. Guys, for anyone that like doesn't understand, if you have to make it feel like work and you are doing it to get a reward at the end, that is the definition of a job. You are going to work doing something you don't feel like doing to get your paycheck at the end of the day, right? If video games should never be that. And I feel like a lot in the industry is that. It's all FOMO forcing you to just be on the game. And EA has been terrible with that, where it's like, hey, if you don't get this card, you're pretty toast. I'd also hope that they keep the same structure of rewards and things that they've tried, the new comp seasons that they've been coming out with. I know you're not playing Hutt right now, but they have an X Factor one right now where like you can only use X Factors, and that's huge. Like, I hope that stuff comes back at launch and it's done correctly.
Yeah, I saw a few of them talking about that, like with the X Factors. So I'm guessing the price of X Factors went back up a little bit then.
Well, then they release like 98 over headshot cards that are deemed X Factor. Mm-hmm. Like, just eh. Here's what I think should happen. There should be a competitive I don't even know if the player base can support all this. That's like the big thing, right? Like, not having old gen is huge, because now those players, if they really
like, was another thing that
we haven't even talked on that yet, but like, the player base needs to be big enough to support the new mode, which has always been the fear, is that if you add in a new mode, now they're not playing rivals and you can't find a game. But if you add in comp seasons too, now you're separating even more. I think that the more ways to play is definitely what's best for the consumer. But I'm just being realistic. Like, if you can't find a game, you're not going to be able to find a game.
Right.
But there should be a base card champs every week. A base card should almost be like cards that you chase all year round to get like that ultimate team. Getting Connor McDavid in January as a base card should matter, because you could put him on your base card team and that's the best base card. But it could also be like base cards and event cards for the current week. So if a new event comes out and you pull one of those event cards, they usually never matter. They're just like, oh, I'm going to trade this in for collectibles. Make those cards matter by allowing us to use them in game for, like, I just think that would go a long way. And you can even expand it and make it team of the week and live moments as well. I think it kind of gets a little out of hand there. But just making those cards more useful would be huge. But no old gen, bro. I don't know. That was one of the more shocking revelations, I think. I don't know about you. I fully expected it to be on old gen.
Yeah, I thought it would be, just because like MLB did it. And yeah, then, and I know it's not the same type of game, but then I actually don't know for sure, because I just, the Madden, I only saw it on, did they do it for Madden? Because like, I know NCAA football went strictly,
I think, Madden is old gen. That was what was surprising, is that Madden was old gen. But we don't see these numbers, but like,
yeah,
I saw that PlayStation users as a whole, 50% are still on PS4, which was shocking to me. Mm. But you know, the consoles are expensive. We live in the worst economic era ever, probably, like one of them, not ever, but one of them. And, you know, I can definitely understand, but I think that in my time being of someone who has been obsessed with video games since, you know, my first real console where I can remember getting it and playing every game on it was PlayStation 1. I played Super Nintendo and all of that. There has not been a worse console generation generation over generation. Like PS4, you could just still do everything that you were doing on PS5. You know, the lighting just wasn't nearly as good. But now these developers, guys, if you have little faith in EA developing a game for NHL in a year, could you imagine them developing the game, but then also after spending dev resources on downgrading it so that the things they did implement somewhat work on the old consoles? Like, it's not going to super improve, but it's just less dev time wasted on old gen. And for anyone that can't afford a new console, I understand, you know, going out and spending a couple hundred dollars on a new console is expensive. But if you've bought in the last four NHL seasons of game, those games are $100. And the last 4 years you've bought in on that, you've gotten a pretty good run out of it while new gen has been available. You know, like, that's the cost of a new console. Go buy a Series X. I think they're $300. Trade in your old system. Get $5 from GameStop or whatever. And but like, I think a Series X is pretty cheap in relative terms to PS5 and Series X. So
Series, I know the Series S is like,
that's what I was talking about. Sorry, the Series S.
Series S one, I know you could even get for like cheaper. I think you get for like $200 like used. Like,
dude,
I think
go,
you get,
man. People need to utilize. You know what? As I've gotten older and as I've gotten a kid now, so we're getting rid of the toys, you know, and the stuff like the Mamaroo's gone now.
Yeah.
Dude, Facebook Marketplace, it's just like free money. Like, people will buy anything, dude, and you will find crazy deals.
Dude, when I saw my last house, there was this stuff where it's like, we're coming into this house, like, and this one's new, and we built it. It's just like, okay, well, that furniture's not going to, like, look good there, and, like, that type of thing. Or, like, you know, we already got a lot of use out of it. It's like, but, like, you know, we donate stuff all the time, too, to this place called Savers that's here. But it's also, like, some of the things, it's like, well, I mean, what is the phrase? Another man's trash, another man's
treasure.
Like,
yeah, man. Like,
it's kind of like, you know, and some people are like, hey, like, I really want that. I'm like, okay. Like,
you'll
come
find
pick it
people
up.
That are just like, hey, you know, you had a kid, can't game anymore. Here's a Series S for $140. Yeah. Like, you just be on it. Take. I know no one under the age of 25 uses Facebook probably anymore. but like, honestly, Marketplace is a gold mine. So definitely check that out. So that was huge. We'll see what that means for the player base and things like that. Hopefully we get leaderboards. You know, I think that's like the last piece of the puzzle. The other thing that when I saw the XP path and it made me excited and the new wildcard mode, I don't want to be super negative, but I still think if the reward structure is the same for rivals and squad battles, that's a massive like miss. If they don't find a way to rework how those modes, like, again, having to play 50 rivals games in a week to have a shot in division one or two at ultimate is just awfully rough. And it harps on that FOMO that they try to instill on you. It's like, hey, if you're not on the game for 40 hours a week, like, you're way behind, you know. And if you reward someone for being great at the game, like I mentioned, this, make it a benchmark. Ultimate should be 30 wins. You know, if you get 30 wins in 34 games, you're probably in high division one. But if that's the case, then let that be ultimate, you know? And if you can't, and if you are someone who struggles with the game, but you want the rewards, you know, maybe you have to play 60 games. Like, I don't even think there should be a limiter. Like, I don't think there should be a limiter in a week at all. If someone wants to play all of that and get the rewards in ultimate, they should. That should be a thing. But then you add in like a leaderboard so that you can reward those players for. I pray that they just start adding vanity items. I talked about this so much. If someone gets top 100 in squad or in champs in a week, you are the 1% of the 1%. I know for you, it doesn't mean the same because, like, you know, you top 100 champs is whatever, you know. But if you think about it, 5,000 people play champs in a week, and those are all good players because they've qualified for champs or better players. You get top 100, man. Give them a jersey. Give them a banner, you know, something like that. The other thing super interested in, and I'm curious what you'll think of this as someone who streams, you see that grudge match thing?
Mm-hmm.
So the snippet's kind of confusing, but it says in all offline and online modes, there will be some sort of graphic or animation that will show you past data on your matchups together. So, like, honestly, I saw a lot of people in my comments being like, that's just for franchise mode. And if that's the case, cool. That adds immersion, you know? If you, in your franchise mode, you know, the Sharks beat the piss out of the Knights five times all season and you're in, or four times in game five at the end of the year, you can see, like, your matchups together. I think that's cool. Anything that you can make towards that looks like a real presentation is a W. But if online, God, dude, when I saw this, I was like, man, the dudes that stream snipe me are just going to have a goddamn field day. So from my understanding, if you match up with someone that you played online in Rivals, it will show you past performances recent of that, which is like super cool and like a flex. So like if I'm matching up with you, I'm going to lose. But imagine I win. I'm going to sit there and make you watch that full cinematic of that. That says 0-1. You know, like, I'm going to make you watch that whole thing. So that's kind of cool. I think the other thing it does, World of Chell. You play a lot of World of Chell compared to me.
Yeah.
And something that I want to change I think that we need friend of the podcast, Robert Thomas, to rip some Chell with us this season.
Yeah. He always is. He's a big, he's a big Nasher. He's a big first month of the game player.
Yeah, he's a big Nasher.
It's funny. I side story. I actually did run into Nasher here 2 weeks ago. He came to St. Louis for the State Wars, which is like a roller hockey tournament that people out there, I'm sure, know about. It's like you kind of put a team together, you pay your way to come down, and you play like in a certain division or whatever.
Certain division, yeah.
One of my buddies that I went to high school with, or he was a little younger than me, but we kind of crossed paths for hockey, and he's like, he moved to Columbus, and of all teams in Columbus,
that's crazy.
People he runs into Nasher, and he didn't even know who Nasher was because he's just like oblivious, and yep. I was like, oh, I met this guy, he knows you, and I'm like, who? He's like, his name's Andrew, and he's like said his name and whatever, and I'm like, oh my god, that's Nasher. Like, what a small world. And now they play roller hockey, and like, so when he came here, I was like, oh, I'll go out and watch the game. And I went out and watched it, and it was funny just to see the guys. Like, but yeah, me and him were talking about that. I was teasing him. I'm like, oh yeah, you'll only play the game for like a month. Like, I was like, you know, it's like, but no,
I'm loving the first month. I know. Like, I've said this before too. I got to meet all the Washington Capitol players the media tour. And Hendrix Lapierre said that he watched my Hut stuff. So I know he plays that. I would love it if we, dude, as a content creator. And again, this would be flexing like our ability to like talk to some of these guys. If they get their 99 card and you could play Hut co-op. Like, if we can hop into Rivals and you've got Tomer's 99 card ripping around like his real card, I would love that content. Get him on the mic. Like, I would love to. That was something that I watch a lot of other content creators for other games. I don't watch a lot of content. I try not to because, again, I think that you inherently, you know, you don't want to take styles and things from people that watch in your niche. I watch a ton of MLB content creators and what they do with real, like Kyle, like your friend Kyle. Dude, he just plays with Dylan Cease. You know, like, he just, like they're boys, like, and his level is far higher than mine, obviously. But I've gotten to meet a lot of players in over my experiences at all these NHL events and things like that I've been able to talk to and meet. And a lot of them play games. It would be really cool to, you know, be able to, like, do some more, like, videos with playing with some NHLers. I think that'd be a cool look because I think a lot of people don't realize how much these guys are just normal when the lights are off, you know, so... that would definitely be something that cool, play some World of Chell. But anyways, back to the grudge match thing. I think that for World of Chell, if you have like a club with your boys, you know, when you match up for a game, for the most part, you don't remember anyone else. You know, maybe you get beat down, you remember that team name, whatever. But if it shows you like, hey, I keep matching up these guys and they beat us every time, like that adds, like, emotionally, you will get more invested by seeing past performances, I think, you know? And I think that is good for the game, if that's how it works. It was very cryptic in what they were in how they said it. So it'll definitely be interesting to see how the grudge match system works. I hope it's like your last five games against this player, you know, this is all your stats. These are your goals against. Imagine it showed like replays or clips. Like, I know we're getting out of control here, but that'd be kind of cool too. But anyways, the last big, it looks like this year is pretty light on World of Chell, and I know a lot of people are going to be disappointed in that. I'll be honest with you, someone who does not play World of Chell, you guys got a lot of love last year with the store. I don't even know if it works well and if it went over well, but like in the battle pass system, Hut, it's so funny. Everyone just assumes that they dump all their resources and money into Hut, dude. Hut just never gets big updates. So this looks like to be the year that they're finally doing something. But World of Chell, it looks like a little bit light. They mentioned like live events, and I'm like, does that mean like they're sending you out to Vancouver, or like is live events like every week? There's like an I don't know. I have to wait and see on that. I think there is a deep dive for World of Chell. I think the gameplay changes will impact World of Chell quite a bit. So that'll be hopefully it's better than last year. That tether system bricked goalies off the start, so it doesn't look like they're messing with controllers. By the way, they're keeping hybrid. They will not do that again. That's a bad PR move. So we'll see. What was the other thing? Oh, I low-key think franchise mode players might be the ones that get excited the most when everything comes out. Again, not gonna spoil, but what they showed in the trailer was, or in the press release, was that there's a new franchise hub, and it's really good looking. They shot a little bit in the media thing, and there's a lot of other stuff in franchise mode coming that's going to be announced that I think the hardcore franchise mode players will really enjoy. So it's always nice. I don't know, you're a little bit younger than me. 2 years doesn't seem like that long, but back in the early 90s, just from like the era of gaming and like when it comes, like. I was like playing offline, like GM mode all the way to like NHL 08. I didn't really play versus online because I was just played my boys, like coach co-op. So I didn't really focus on online until like 9 and 10. But I played so much franchise mode every year, at least 100 to 200 hours every year. I dump into that. So I do love to see franchise mode getting some love. That's pretty much it, I think, from the reveal trailer. I don't think that there were and all the other news that we've gotten. So I guess now, dude, as a Blues fan, walk us through the offer sheets, what went through your mind, how it played out, Mike Greer almost screwing you over, like all of that.
Yeah, I was stunned by it just because it was we never get news like this in August. And when I saw it, I thought it was like a joke, it was real,
like that you guys were offer sheeting.
Yeah, and you never see the two guys, you've never had before. It's like two guys from the same team at the same time. And, you know, like I jokingly, and I'm not sitting here saying like I took credit for it, but it's like, I think I showed you the text I sent. I sent like multiple insider people. I was like, they should offer sheet Broberg. Like, and part of it was when I heard Frank Saravalli bring it up too. Cause every year I always go like, look through the RFAs just for fun. And like, look at the ones that are like realistic. Like obviously if you like offer sheet like most Sider, you'd have to give up like a ton.
Yeah. You're giving up four first round picks.
Right,
like, that's but it's not, like, it's not happening.
Broberg was like that weird spot where like you could kind of do it enough to where like you take it's like a calculated risk, but then also like it's not gonna like cripple you, which it really isn't if you think about it. Like it's only I think it was only a second round pick for him, and then it was a third for Holloway, which and then it ended up being like a little more because we made that second trade with them. But
yeah,
but in the grand scheme of things, like Broberg was a former top 10 pick. And we need a lefty so badly on our left side. Like Torrey Krug's probably done, maybe forever. I have no clue. I mean, that's a whole one of those weird.
It's crazy not seeing news on that because like when he shut down the trade to Philly, yeah. Like that, it was like everyone's just like, oh, I guess we're out on Krug. There's no news.
And another thing that happened this summer was the draft. They tried trading him to Anaheim, and he turned that trade down too. So I don't know if this is all like 100% on the up and up when it comes to the injury. Not saying he's faking it or anything, but I think there's like more kind of an agreement like. You're not going to go anywhere, then you can either kind of sit out and deal with your injury. And I mean, I don't know. I mean, people be surprised to hear that stuff, but I don't think it's exactly, 100%. Like, no one knows the story really, but yeah, I was stunned. I mean, I thought the Blues weren't going to get them because I thought Edmonton was in a spot, especially when they traded CC to the Sharks. I thought they were in a spot to like, they could match it and like they could fit it and make sense. And I just figured like it's another one of those cap gymnastics type of things where they would make it work because, you know, that's what those teams do, right? Like they load, when you're going to try to win a cup too, like you don't really want like, you know, a weakness at any spot in your lineup. And both those guys, like, you know, especially with their youth, like they can't really, you know, afford to like lose them, I thought. And, you know, they ended up making, I'll let you talk about the Sharks trade the most, but it's, I kind of like what they did too, even though like I'm not an Oilers fan, but I thought they were like, it was kind of a smart move because like more than likely they're probably going to be in a playoff spot by the time we hit the trade deadline so they can add and then they'll have more.
Nope. There we go.
I don't know where it cut off at.
No, they could add at the deadline.
And, you know, be in a spot where they'll have more money at that point. I don't know though. I mean, we'll see how it plays out. It'll just be interesting. And talk about like adding like a grudge match. It'll be more of a grudge match than the Blues play the Oilers now. And, everyone will definitely remember that. And I really do hope more GMs start to use this tactic because I mean, there's a lot of dudes like this in the same kind of like spot where maybe the compensation doesn't really equal how good the player is. And I think personally, I think Broberg will be even better here and really blossom into whatever that could be with a guy like Parayko. You know what I mean? I mean, the guy can absolutely wheel. Everyone saw that in the cup final in the Dallas series against with the Oilers. Like he looked really good. So yeah, I don't know. I love the move for the Blues. I don't think there was any downside to it. And everyone that's talking about the money and everything, it's like,
They definitely did get double. Like the contract is overpaid, but the Blues had a cap space. So.
Right, exactly. It's almost like you guys like with like Toffoli and stuff, and with other. It's like who
that's
cares?
Exactly
like
Toffoli.
Like,
yeah,
like we're not gonna see probably a cup here in the next 2 years. Here, that's fine. I think they can make the playoffs now. I think they can sneak in a wild card spot, which I think
the Blues always do. Man, they're never talked about, and they're always just sniffing. They're like the more successful Calgary Flames.
Yeah, we have one of the best tandems in the league in that too, like with Hofer and Binnington. So, and now that the defense, like, I mean, because our defense core got so much better overnight by that, having that move, it's crazy. And now you have a tandem of Parayko and Broberg, and then you got Letty and Falk, and you got Suter and Matthew Kessel. I mean, that's a lot better than last year. But now, yeah, what did you think about the Sharks trade to, like, make it all work?
Well, like, first I want to bring up the how or what, like, how vindictive or calculated what St. Louis did. So I listened to the Friedman's podcast, like the emergency one afterwards. Dude, it wasn't just offer sheeting. It was the amount was $1 below. They went to the absolute maximum they could before the next level of compensation. Yeah. They did it at a date where Edmonton was already over and they couldn't do anything to push it down. Like, I don't know the exact, like, what the exact terminology or the exact, like, logistics behind it, but they did it at a date where, like, Edmonton was screwed and they couldn't really make a move with those players to figure it out. And then the amounts, again, they was just very well done by St. Louis to get both players. Now, Edmonton did a great job getting Podkolzin to basically replace Holloway. You know, that was a decent one. The Cody Ceci one, I'm interested in, like, so obviously as a Sharks fan, Cody Ceci is immediately a top six defenseman for the Sharks. The Sharks have an AHL decor. So everyone's like, Cody Ceci's terrible. I don't think you understand. This team had 60 points last year, and they basically gave up 50 shots on goal every game. If you have a player that played in the playoffs regularly, regardless of how bad he was at the very end, you know, that's an upgrade. They got a third round pick for him, which, first of all, people were like, yo, Emberson, they gave up a prospect defenseman. Emberson, they got off waivers. And while I think he did fine for being picked off waivers, no team, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like this is some prospect that they were developing and he was like looking like a top four defenseman. I've watched Emerson quite a bit. He's okay, but I don't think that, I think he'll be a seventh defenseman for Edmonton, maybe. It's not, dude, nothing of consequence.
I think they also, like, in, like, some weird way, I almost think Stan Bowman, like, made these GMs around the league think, like, oh my God, I got to get rid of CeCe so I can match these guys. And at least, even if not, he put it in a spot to where he could match him if he wanted to, which is why you saw that second deal.
Exactly. With
the Blues,
yeah.
Because everyone's like, why would the Blues make another trade with them?
So they weren't, I would assume it's probably to not get.
It was a threat. So, like, they all played it. They're all shrewd. They're all smart. Yeah. Doug Armstrong played it smart. Bowman played it smart. And I think Bowman was like, I'm going to make it in a spot where I can do it and threaten to do it, but I really don't want to do it. And he pretty much said that. Like, I don't, you know, I had nothing wrong with the players. I watched Bowman's press conference, but he had it in a spot where I think he made teams around the league think, like, I got to get rid of CeCe. And then, I mean, I think the Sharks, like, when me and you were texting about this, it's like, I just think I wanted the Blues to get him. So I was like, God bless.
Oh,
like,
yeah, I can understand him being a Blues fan. Yeah. That,
but then at the same time, I was also like, man, couldn't Greer have just waited, like, maybe, like, a few more days or, and you know what I mean, tried to, like, push it up and be like,
here's
all right, take it or leave it. You're not getting it unless you give me that. You know what I mean?
So, when I saw, like, the takes on Twitter about it being such a bad trade, we don't get to hear, like, the other stuff. Oh, you back? Yeah, we go. We don't get to hear, all the other offers. But if, like, let's say Chicago, it's like, we'll take them. You're going to give us a first or a second round pick, right? Mm-hmm. And if the Sharks said, no, give us a first and we'll take CeCe, and Bowman says, no, I'm not doing that, then the Sharks don't have a third round pick and an NHL defenseman. You know what I'm saying? Like, cap and contract does not matter. CeCe's contract's over at the end of this year, and it would not stun me at all if he's put in a regular role. And the Sharks will be a better team this year, not much better, but they will just be a better team, that if he is flipped for a six-round pick to who always needs a defenseman at the Leafs for, like, a seventh-round pick or something at the deadline. But, you know, I mean, like, I even if they don't trade him, it's whatever, because cap means nothing. Just like that Toffoli contract, what everyone said, that's a terrible deal. Dude, you can't – Montreal Canadiens fans, you're always one of the more louder fan bases – your team ruined Kasperi Kotkaniemi's development by throwing him into the lineup immediately and getting shit pumped every game because he wasn't ready and there was nothing around him, right? Now, he might have never developed into a good player anyways, but you don't put Macklin and Will Smith in and not have anything else to assist, right? These guys aren't Bedard. Those are once in a, you know, every 10-year kind of thing. So I think that, like, that was the thing with the Toffoli. I'm like, cap doesn't mean anything. In 3 years, where we maybe make a wild card in three seasons, and I doubt it. I think it's four, but that's what I'm saying. So from the CZ thing, I wasn't thrilled that they bailed out the Oilers, but as a Sharks fan, we got a third-round pick out of a thing that we were not involved in. Like, we had nothing, you know what I'm saying? So yeah. I'm okay with it. It reminds me a little bit, because a lot of people were harping on the Goudreau waiver pickup because they bailed out the Rangers, right? People don't understand that they tried to trade for Goudreau. Maybe like a pick was involved as well. The Sharks just wanted Goudreau because they need NHL players, and he would not waive his no trade clause. So they were like, put him on waivers and we'll take him. And that was how they got Goudreau, right? So scummy, but like, that's, you know. Now let's talk about the big news that came out yesterday.
Yeah.
For all the CC haters or all the CC stuff that Greer took, getting the number one goaltender prospect in the world, and they did not have to give up Will Smith, Quentin Musty, Dickinson, or obviously Macklin or Eklund. Pretty huge. I think, you know, that's it maybe makes them the best prospect pool. I think Anaheim is still slightly better, but I got to say that was a pretty solid deal. It ended up being basically hurdle for Askarov because they gave Vegas his first pick, as well as Edson, I think. I don't know. I always mess up his name. First rounder from Vegas 2 years ago, who actually looked like a pretty decent prospect. It looks more like a third line center, but looks like he's going to be a guaranteed NHLer. For the former 10th overall or 12th overall, I always mix them up. I think Wallstad went a little bit later. But no, huge. I think that's big. Like, let me ask you this. Top end goaltender prospects, do you think it is better when they face a ton on a bad team, or do they need a good team to be successful? Like, do you think that Askarov will do well?
I think he'll do well. I think it's, I told you that like 2 weeks ago when that rumor came out, I was like, dude, the Sharks should be all over that. Like,
yeah.
Everyone that was like Montreal, they have Fowler.
Carolina was the big one. Carolina, I thought that it would go to, I thought he would go to Carolina.
Yeah. And I also was like wondering like what they thought about Kachekov if they did that too, but I guess,
well, it was like, get rid of Anderson and now it's, yeah, Kachekov and Askarov. I think, right, that was the thing.
I just think like it's so much better for the league for him to end up there. Like, mm-hmm, for the Sharks, like I think when number one goalies and it's like very obvious that they're like blocked, I think it's like good when they get, even if they're on like bad teams, I think it's good to have, you know, like spread out the wealth, you know what I mean? I don't know. I hate watching guys get blocked for years and years and years. Because of the,
what's
situation,
a good example of that? Swayman. Although
Swayman
was a perfect storm,
a
I think that, I think that they like,
I mean, even you could even say like Saros a little bit when Rene was there.
Oh, Rene,
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, he was probably
where guys just stay too long.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a few of those. Geez, I'm trying to think now.
I mean,
you could come up with a bunch.
Vasilevsky, like, and Ben Bishop.
Yeah,
they waited on Vazzy for a long time. Like, they, yeah, did not, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you went the way that Spencer Knight was, like, going.
Oh, that's the one. Yeah,
all that, like, that was another one.
That would have,
like,
been an awkward conversation had.
Well, it's just like, it's like, you. It's even like with Askarov. It's like, why, when Nashville, like, clearly, like, loves Saros, like, why did they draft Askarov? Which, like, it's fine, like, whatever, they flipped them. But I mean, I'd say like the value that they flipped them for, like, I think you guys like won that trade right now, at least, like, you know what I mean? Like, why?
It's
mind,
tough,
like,
when you look at it as hurdle for just because goaltenders never have good value in trades. Like, very rarely do they.
Yeah.
But when I think about like hurdle at 30 on a contract that's $6 million a year, which I guess isn't terrible because they've retained, but all the knee injuries and everything like that, it just, yeah, was never going to fit. Getting,
we'll see how he does this year, right?
Yeah, exactly. That, dude, Vegas. Yeah. I'm a little concerned. Like, I think that they are a good team, but man, they are the most injury.
Yeah, Petro had knee surgery too.
Yeah, yeah. You have Eichel, and then you have Mark Stone, and then, yeah, you've got Hurdle. Like, Vegas, if everyone is healthy, a powerhouse, I think. But yeah, man, are they? They are a couple pins away from. The other thing about that pick, though, that was interesting. So it's top 10 protected, but it if Vegas gets a top 10 pick, which I would say the odds of that are like 15%. Yeah. It's not zero, but I think it's like 15%.
I think they'll make moves too. Like,
exactly.
I
from my understanding, it's a top 10 protected where if Vegas picks in the top 10, the Sharks can send their own pick instead of Vegas's pick. So what it did was basically allow it so Vegas doesn't make the playoffs and they win the lottery and they bump ahead of the Sharks. The Sharks have guaranteed that they will pick the highest of those two. So while it's not like if it's top 10 that you get it next year, which would have been awesome. That would have been unbelievable. Right. But no, I you know, it's still not a bad one. So I'm excited because dude, this is like a GM mode rebuild. Like they literally have gotten a top end prospect at every single position. The Carlson trade at this time is a fleece because of who they got with that Pittsburgh pick. They got Sam Dickinson, who was one of the top defensive prospects in the league coming into this year. And Carlson did not help them, you know, which I said at the beginning when I saw like, dude, we've already seen what happens when Carlson has an alpha right shot defenseman with him. It just does not work. Anyways. But yeah, lots of stuff. We're now in like the boring season, I think because right before training camp, but, we'll see. And yeah, man. So it's good to be back. Episode 100 of Coffee and Shell. We've gone through some iterations, but it's funny that you know, we're here now. And it lined up well with NHL 25's reveal. I don't know when the next deep dive will be or anything like that, but I think that we'll probably wait for the next episode after we get more news about NHL. And then once the game's back on, and we'll do a couple prediction shows because I think those are fun. Back on Saturday, we'll record on Saturday mornings again throughout the season weekly. So appreciate everyone who's listened to the show from start to finish when it was me and Kesso all the way through. And we'll be back shortly with more NHL 25 news. All right, Stu, thanks for hopping on today.